Chapter 28. It was Nesbitt, cuffed and in custody against the car. Kate gasped.
"What are you doing here?"
she shouted. "What do you think?" Nesbitt shouted back as the cops tugged him toward the cruiser. Suddenly, Kate heard a sound of a car engine starting. Her head snapped around, and she spotted reverse lights on another dark car, farther up the row. Russo. Who else would drive away in the middle of a scene like this? Nesbitt saw it, too. "Now wait, stop. You got the wrong guy," he called out, right before the cops shoved him into the back seat of the cruiser. "Officers, look up there. You got the wrong cop," Kate cried, pointing and hurrying off the curb. But the two cops in the nearer cruiser were slamming the door on Nesbitt and jumping back inside. The two other cops were trying to get the neighbors to stay on the sidewalk, away from the scene. Down the street, the car squealed out of the space and zoomed down Meadowbrook, almost hitting a group of residents.
"Stop that car!"
Kate cried and took off, running.
"Help! I have to catch that car!"
She kept running with the knife, a sight that sent neighbors fleeing in fear. She sprinted past them, her heavy coat flying, her bare feet killing her as she tore down the street.
"I'm behind you,"
Gina called out, but Kate didn't look back. If she couldn't catch the car, she had to see the license plate. The car was dark and sleek. What kind was it? It was pulling away so fast she couldn't even read the plate. She picked up the pace to the end of the street, panting frantically, and kept running even after it was futile. The car barreled through a stop sign, then swerved onto the main road, passed a minivan at speed, and accelerated. Kate wished she had a gun, like on TV, but all she could do was watch helplessly as the car became two red lights in the distance, then disappeared. She threw the knife in frustration as it clattered on the cold asphalt. She bent over, trying to catch her breath. She couldn't feel her feet anymore, but they looked like hell, red, pink, and cut up. She straightened when Gina caught up with her, and they both stood, panting in the middle of the street, like the out-of-shape gals they were. Kate said, between breaths, "I think I just made a big mistake."
"You sure as hell did,"
Gina nodded, panting.
"Go get my knife."
Back in Center City, Philly, at the Criminal Justice Center, it took 2 hours, 4 phone calls from top police brass, and a signed statement from Kate to convince the uniformed cops not to arraign Detective Nesbitt. By that time, stringers listening to the police scanners had gotten wind of what had happened, and the press thronged outside the CJC. Kate and Nesbitt found themselves in one of the all-white attorney interview rooms, waiting for a go-ahead from uniformed cops before they could leave the building without being hassled. It was her first chance to apologize. "I really am sorry. I didn't realize it was you." She shifted in her heels. Her feet were killing her.
"Don't worry about it."
Nesbitt shoved his hands into the pockets of a brown bomber jacket, which he wore with jeans and old Nikes.
"I wasn't taking any chances. I'd follow you home, but some wacky blonde gave me a flat."
"Ouch. Sorry, I forgot."
"No sweat. It was my kid's car. Russo knows my car. He would have made me if I took my own."
"So now your kid's mad at you?"
"She's at college. If you don't tell, I won't."
Kate smiled. "So, wacky blonde, huh?"
"Yes, Your Honor. You should have seen yourself with that knife."
Nesbitt took a hand out of his pocket and raised it in a bad imitation. "Nigella on roids."
"Nigella? What kind of reference is that for a detective?"
"Hey, I cook."
"Well, I stab. Give me some credit. I killed that tire."
"After the uniforms came down the street. What was that about, rookie?"
Nesbitt smiled, and Kate gave him a shove, forgetting that federal judges weren't supposed to have fun. He laughed.
"What were you thinking? Were you going to get Russo by yourself?"
"I called for backup."
Nesbitt's eyes flared. "Where'd you get called for backup? TV? I hate to tell you this, but you're no David Caruso. You're not even the cold case girl, whatever her name is. I'm a professional. Leave it to me."
"Then how come you didn't see me sneak up on you, huh?"
Kate laughed.
"Busted."
"Never mind that. You took a risk."
"So did you. You're supposed to be by the book."
"I was by the book. I got you into the mess, and I'll get you out of it. That's number one in the book." Nesbitt faced her fully, no longer laughing, and brushed graying bangs from his forehead, revealing eyes that were a very steady blue, Kate saw for the first time.
If I hadn't taken the record about you from Simone's hotel room, it wouldn't have been in the file, and Russo wouldn't have known about it.
In the next second, the door opened suddenly, and Special Agent Brady came in, his expression animated when he saw Kate.
Judge, here you are.
Brady was followed by three other special agent types.
Sorry I'm late. I was meeting with Sergeant Schiller and Inspector Dennis at the roundhouse.
Brady shook Kate's hand with vigor, then introduced her to the agents filling the tiny room. She shook their hands and Brady said,
What a scare you had. I understand Detective Russo is following you?
The question must have been rhetorical because Brady turned immediately to Nesbitt.
You Steve Nesbitt?
Yes.
Nesbitt extended a hand and Brady shook it quickly.
I met with your inspector and sergeant just now. They're not very happy with you tonight. Neither of them was aware that you were surveilling Judge Fanti.
That's right. I'm off duty. All blame goes to me.
Kate blinked, surprised.
Brady said, There'll be plenty of it to go around.
He was trying to help, Kate interjected, feeling defensive for Nesbitt.
You can use me, Brady,
Nesbitt said, his tone firm.
Jurisdiction or no, I can help. Russo was my partner. I know the most about him. I knew he'd be there tonight, and he was.
I'm not going to stand here and argue with you, Detective. You're out, and we're in.
Brady turned to Kate.
Your Honor, any threat to your health and well-being is within the Bureau's jurisdiction, not that of the Philadelphia Police. With the recent attacks on the federal judiciary and their families, we're taking your case very seriously.
Why can't jurisdiction be concurrent? Kate asked, annoyed. Two heads are better than one, and Detective Nesbitt's point about knowing Russo makes sense.
With due respect, Judge, it doesn't work that way. The Bureau has more resources at its disposal, and more experience with attacks on federal judges and officials. We're better able to protect you.
Then where were you tonight? Kate shot back, and Nesbitt hid a smile. Brady answered,
We would have been there, Judge, if you'd have given us the chance. I tried to speak with you before you went on the bench, but you declined. You said you'd call tonight, but you didn't. You'll find a message from me on your home and cell phones. Your secretary gave me both numbers.
Oops. Kate had turned the phone off at Gina's, out of habit. The sudden noise always bothered Warren.
We can't protect you if you don't cooperate with us, Judge.
Brady turned to Nesbitt.
I think we can take it from here, Detective.
She needs protection tonight.
Nesbitt gestured at Kate.
He's not going to let her go. We'll protect her. We'll be outside her house in cars all night. End of discussion. I think it's time for you to go.
Nesbitt pursed his lips and touched Kate's coat.
Judge, no matter what these guys say, call me if you need anything.
He brushed his bangs back, revealing another flash of blue.
I'll check in with you tomorrow.
Thanks. Sorry about the tire.
No sweat.
Nesbitt turned and walked out of the room, and Kate had an attack of separation anxiety. He'd put himself and his job in jeopardy to make sure she was safe. He wasn't a by-the-book guy. He was an above-the-call guy. An hour later, Kate had shed her coat, bag, shoes, suit, and underwear on the way to the bathroom, where she'd taken an endless bubble bath, washing the grime out of the cuts on her feet, then dried off and crawled into bed, feeling clean, exhausted, and reasonably safe. Before they let her enter the house, the FBI agents had scoured the place, checking her phone messages to make sure Russo hadn't called, and even reinforcing the back door with plywood. They sat staked outside the house in cars, foregoing her offers of the warm house and vying with the press for the few parking spaces on the street. Kate put it all out of her mind and buried her face in the pillow, her last waking thought of Nesbitt.
Hey, I cook.
Nesbitt was also Kate's first waking thought, and she lay in her soft, warm bed, trying to understand why. A detective with graying sideburns, deep crow's feet around his eyes, and a brown bomber jacket that fit too snugly around the waist. Hardly the kind of man she usually went for, much less woke up thinking about. She flopped over and became aware that the soles of her feet hurt, which made her remember last night.
In the next instant, the phone was ringing. It must have been ringing before, too, waking her. She opened her eyes, her head muzzy. The room was still dark. It sounded like it was raining outside. She lifted her head and glanced at the clock. 5:45. She double-checked the clock, but she hadn't read it wrong. Who could be calling at this hour? It had to be the press. They'd left messages last night. She let it ring until voicemail picked up, but in the next instant, her cell phone started ringing beside the bed, the blue numbers springing to life in the dark room. She checked the display. It was Gina. Kate's brain came alive. Russo. Warren. "What's the matter?" Kate said, opening the phone. "Did you see the newspaper?" "No, I was asleep." "I know, it has the story about Russo last night." "That's not all." "Go and get it."